Well, as part of Football Australia's celebrations of 100 years of the Socceroos, the game's governing body is conducting a series of chats to commemorate some of our greatest moments and greatest players over that last century. I'm Simon Hill from Network 10 and Paramount Plus. Today, we are focusing on some of the goalkeeping greats that have donned the green and gold down the years. From George Cartwright, the very first to keep goal for Australia in 1922, through to the likes of Norman Conquest. Yes, that is a real name. Ron Lords, Jack Riley, Mark Bosnich, and all the rest. In total, just 52 players have been given the honour of protecting the nation's goals. And joining me for this nostalgic reflection are three of the very best. Ron Corrie won 33 caps for Australia, making his debut in 1967 against Singapore and making his final appearance against New Zealand in 1973. He was cap number 200 for the Socceroos and the 16th goalkeeper to stand between the posts. Mark Schwarzer made his debut against Canada in 1993 and went on to win a record 109 international caps, bowing out against Brazil in 2013. He was Socceroo number 397 and goalkeeper number 36 to wear the green and gold. And Matt Ryan made his debut in 2012 against North Korea. To date, he has won 71 international caps, the latest of which was against Saudi Arabia in March of this year. He was Socceroo number 555 and the 47th protector of the nation's goal. So I wanted to ask a bigger picture question about how the role of the goalkeeper has changed down the years. Obviously, you come from probably three different eras, although I know Matty and Mark Schwartz's careers did overlap to a certain degree. But in Ronnie's time, there was the change of the four-step rule. Schwartzy, for you, probably the back pass rule was the biggest change during your playing career. Matty, of course, the modern era with the sweeper-keeper, more playing from the feet. So has the necessary skill set changed to find success? Schwartzy, I'll come to you first on this one.
Yeah, 100% it's changed. To be fair, I went through all those changes, even from the four-step rule to being able to roll the ball around your 18-yard box with your hand, then pick it up, and you could do it multiple times. You could do it indefinitely until someone came and stood in front of you, to that four steps, having 4 seconds, just an abundance of rule changes. And obviously the biggest one of all was the back pass rule, which certainly hindered a lot of, and I think ruined a lot of goalkeepers' careers coming through that time period. It was tough, but fortunately for me, I was still in my teens, early teens, and it was just enough time, I think, for me to be able to adapt to those changes. But I remember as a kid growing up thinking, what are they doing to my position? They just keep changing, moving the goalposts, as they say, time and time again. So it was a challenge, and it has changed the game dramatically. And look, I think going forward, I think it's been a real positive change for the game.
Ron, what's your thoughts?
Yeah, they have changed. The rules now for the goalkeeper have changed dramatically. As for the playing with the feet and being a sweeper keeper, you need to be much more proficient in that area now than what we used to be. We had the first with 4 bounces, you could hold the ball for 2 or 3 minutes and the referee couldn't penalise you. So then they changed to the back pass rule, but we were allowed to pick up the back pass and the game still didn't quicken up. So they wanted the game to quicken more. So then when they came into playing the back pass ball and you had to play out with your feet, a lot of people who were really good keepers found themselves in a great deal of difficulty because it was a thing that they hadn't worked at before. In saying that, first rule of the goalkeeper for me, the first thing is that the goalkeeper is there to stop goals. So there's no point having a goalkeeper who's good with his feet but can't stop the goals. So you need to have the best of both. And Matty Ryan's a perfect example of that. If you see a lot of coaches around these days and junior coaches especially, they say, oh, we want the goalkeeper to be like Matty Ryan. But that's an impossibility because he is unique in that situation. His feet are very good. He does an excellent job saving goals. So he has the best of both worlds. So and I think one of the biggest ones that found it hard was Mark Bosnich when the back pass rule came in, he had to play with his feet. He had to work so hard to get his feet up to be able to compete with a lot of the other goalkeepers. But in saying that, a lot of coaches these days say, oh, I've got 2 goalkeepers, one that's quite good, but one is much better with his feet. But they select the one sometimes who is much better with his feet. But if you're watching some of the big matches with, like, say, Inter Milan, Chelsea, and a few of the other big games have been on, those goalkeepers are giving away horrendous calamities by trying to pass ball and losing it completely and having goals scored against them in situations that cost them the title and cost them spots in Europe and all these sort of things. So it's one of these things. If you have a goalkeeper with good feet, bonus. But you can't make them like Matt Ryan because they just don't come along like that. He has a unique skill set and he's different in that aspect, and you can try and be like him, but you'll never be able to emulate him.
Matty, in the modern era, what have the changes been like that you've seen as a goalkeeper? Because there must have been some.
Yeah, I mean, obviously I haven't experienced any major rule changes. They sort of obviously happened a bit before my time. But obviously I think the game, the modern game is being more and more designed about more of the ball being in play and obviously wanting a lot more goals being scored and all those types of things. So, you know, the less stoppages with, you know, the goalkeeper having the ball in hand and all those types of stuff. Trying to, you know, help benefit the speed of the game in that way. And, probably the biggest rule change we had is that, you know, you can then start playing your own players from a goal kick within your own, penalty area these days. I guess that's what, you know, where the modern goalkeeper is at the minute. It's obviously more and more prominent that, you know, the want from a club or a coach or a manager or the sporting directors is, you know, having a goalkeeper that obviously possesses all the skills with the handling and the shot stopping, which is, you know, like a goal scorer gets judged on scoring goals. The shot stopping is probably still the most prominent aspect of goalkeeping that a goalkeeper is judged on, how many clean sheets and saves they can make, sort of thing. But then, you know, within that, you know, how good are they with the ball at their feet? How good are they, you know, playing high, you know, just behind the defensive line to cut out, you know, through balls and passes? How athletic are they? And that's probably the direction in which the goalkeeping position has gone. And it's obviously down to the individual as to how well they can, have those attributes within themselves as to how good a goalkeeper they are moving forward. And it can definitely become a real weapon for the team. And you're seeing more and more these days, the goalkeepers are almost got the skill set of what, you know, the players out on the field have. On top of that, the goalkeeping ability, and, you know, they're really trying to use that as the extra man out there in playing out from the back and those sorts of things. And you got prominent guys like Manuel Neuer, Edison, you know, these types of goalkeepers, Ter Stegen, that can, pick and play passes. They have the vision, they have the execution, the technique to really play, penetrating passes out from the back.
Matty, that rule change of being able to play the ball out the back, as in just inside the 18-yard box when you've got a goal kick, has that changed much? And do you like it?
If anything, it probably just gives the two central defenders and I guess a midfielder, if they drop in, it just gives them a little bit more time to receive the pass than before that rule change where they had to be outside the box also. I like the rule. I think, with the attacking team, you know, playing out from the back, playing passes to wherever your players are in that position to try and obviously help the attacking team be more effective with the ball. I think it's a real positive in that aspect. And then obviously it's down to, you know, the individual, the team's ability to play out from there. And, I'm not sure how much it's probably influenced the change of thing. But, as we know, the details always make the difference. And perhaps having that extra second or half a second, you know, time on the ball rather than, you know, having to wait for the pass to get to you and the opposition pressure being right on top of you, it can provide a difference. So I'm sure it does have an effect. And it's down to the individual and the team as to how much they can take advantage of that effect.
I want to ask you about the art of the penalty save. That's obviously something that both Ron and Schwartzy were sort of specialists at. Not that you've not saved penalties, Matty. You certainly have in your career as well. Is there an art to it? Is it pure guesswork? Do you do bucket loads of research ahead of big games or even regular league games to try and study your opponents? What's the process, Schwartzy?
I think when you talk about the research that goes into it, certainly with league games, it's You do. I mean, certainly when I was playing, we went through it. We had video analysis of it and running through their natural penalty takers. But also when you're playing against teams week in, week out, you tend to get to know who the opposition is, obviously, and you get to realize and recognize who are the regular penalty takers. But you've always got to have someone up your sleeve, an extra one, because often players are injured off the pitch at the time, so you never know what's going to happen. Internationally, I think is the one, or European football, because you don't know the opponent that well. So there's a lot more work goes into that. There's a lot more detail in watching penalties, watching the footage that you get. And in terms of training, I personally never felt that you specifically had to train for penalties. It was more about, I think you did it every day anyway. It's the reaction work. Some goalkeepers have different approaches to it. So some do like pick a side. Some have a feeling and go with it. Others don't. Others would like to stay. I like to always try and stay on my feet as long as possible and trying to react after the shot. But I think everyone's different.
Matty, is that your technique as well? Try and wait as long as possible?
I think it depends on the taker and their technique and what they like to do. I think, more recently, you obviously see this Jorginho-type penalty, Bruno Fernandes-type penalties where they're, taking that real sort of long last pause before they're shooting and trying to look at the goalkeeper to see if they move or not. I think, and that's one thing, I look at is if the taker is someone that gets their head down and has their side already chosen, or if it's someone that likes to watch the goalkeeper and then, try to wait for a movement and then put it in a corner, so to speak. So I guess in my research a little bit, I'm looking at that more so. And then I guess from there, I make my decision whether I think, they're going to be shooting to one side or whether I feel I have to try wait as long as possible and then make a reaction. So it's sort of just going off what I'm sort of being faced with at the time.
Yeah, saving penalties sometimes can be a lot of luck and also a lot of study and a lot of knowledge about the players that you're playing against. A lot of times players give themselves away by which way they are going to go, so you can be lucky and go the same way. I saved about 6 or 7 penalties in 67 to 70. And every time I was lucky that I went the right way. But it's much harder these days because now we weren't allowed to move before the ball was kicked off the line. We couldn't go in front of the line. Now the goalkeeper can move and is stuck to the line. Penalty kickers, I know now, they can have that little stall, but it's not the one that it's the one they can't, and they can only do it once. They can't have any more than the one or one stall to put you off. But for me as a goalkeeper, and I train when I coach goalkeepers and tell them to get in the penalty shootouts, all I say to them is you have to make up your decision. And for me, there's two ways. If there's 5 penalties and I don't know which way they're going to go, I will go the same way 5 times, because sooner or later I'm going to get one who won't change his mind and he'll get into that area. Otherwise, don't move at all and wait for the ball to be played, because most of the players these days are likely to play them down the middle with a bit of power, knowing that the goalkeeper will move from either one side or the other. So if you stay and you stay up big and you remain on your feet, then he has a little bit of doubt. And even if he does put the ball wide of you, you still have the ability to be able to pick that up if you're still on your feet and able to move in that area when the ball is played.
The keepers' union, I think this is an important point. It strikes me, and I watch a lot of football, that goalkeepers, when they have a good game, that normally the first guy to go and congratulate them is their number two or the guy that they're vying with for that spot. Now, as an outsider, I've always thought that must be difficult to be a backup keeper or to be the guy who's not the first choice at the moment, because there's only one position in the team that you can fight for or with. Now, I know, obviously, Schwartz, you had a long, battle for that number one shirt for Australia with Zeljko Kalats. And the rumour was that you weren't particularly great friends. But I know from Spider's point of view, he says, no, that wasn't true. Me and Schwartz, go way back. We know each other very well and we were always good mates. Is that the reality of it, or is there always that little bit of tension between the goalkeepers?
I think it really depends on dynamics. And I think what is key is that you have a really good working relationship. And certainly like with Maddie, when our experiences with the national team, you know, there was always that really good working relationship. There was a lot of respect, a lot of working together. You know how lonely the job is. You know how obviously it's an individual position. We are a different breed. Maddie was talking about penalties. You know, everything's always stacked against us. Everyone loves hammering the goalkeepers. It's just the way it is. And we have to always take it on the chin. So there is a close-knit sort of group that you kind of form. And again, I go back to, it's all about having the right personalities and the right type of chemistry with the guys. It's not that you don't want to play, but you also understand that once the selection's made, that's out of your hands and you just got to get on with it and you got to support each other. And I think that's also why you see it a lot of the times, why goalkeepers and certainly the reserve keepers will go over and celebrate with the number one very quickly, because it's kind of almost like a team effort, you know, because of the work that you put in. I mean, it's so important. Matty will tell you, you know, leading up the week up to training, it's not just the goalkeeping coach anymore who serves, it's players, the fellow goalkeepers are serving. It's about doing the right thing by your teammate, your opponent, giving them the right sort of service and you reciprocating that with them as well. So that also forms a level of respect that is so important, I think. I think most goalkeepers who go on and do really well, it's because also they've got a really good unit behind them. Obviously, goalkeeping coach, but also the number two, number three, there's a good relationship. There's a good working relationship. I think that always helps that little bit.
Just before I ask Matty his thoughts on that, I just want to ask you one follow-up question on that, Schwartzy, and forgive me for this one, but obviously the most famous or one of the most famous moments under Horst Hiddink's reign was when, for the second game of the World Cup in 2006, he left you out and he put Spider or Zeljko Kalac in. I mean, you came back for the rest of the tournament, but did that make it difficult? I know, obviously, that wasn't something you didn't want to happen, but did that affect your relationship in that specific moment? That must have been hellish difficult for you and for him by extension as well, and you had to work together.
No, my relationship with Zeljko didn't change at all. If it's not him, you know, he hasn't made the decision. It's the manager that makes the decision. So, you know, if you're going to have any resentment, any anger, any disappointment, it's directed towards the manager, of course, because they're the person that ultimately makes that decision. And then once the game is on, once the game, you're preparing for a game, you've got to do the right thing and be professional. And like I said, you go back to that, allowing your teammate, because he's your teammate, but kind of your opponent as well, because you're vying for that position, but you've got to give them the best opportunity to perform well once that is in that place. You can't change anything. And then it's up to them, you know, it's once they step over that white line, that's them, but you've got to do the right thing and be professional enough to give them the best possible time to prepare for the match. And I think that was always the case. And that's what I always did if that was ever, if I ever found myself in that position. And then obviously during the World Cup for that third game against Croatia, that's where I was, as much as disappointed as I was to be in that position. Nothing that Zeljko would do or say or would have changed anything or had changed anything. So I just have to get on with it and put my disappointment to one side and be part of the team and you're there representing your country.
Matty, does that resonate with you? I mean, you've been in many squads with specifically Mitch Langerak and latterly Danny Vukovic. Adam Federici has been a part of quite a few squads where you've been the number one. Is that the sort of relationship that's carried on into the modern era?
Yeah, definitely. Fortunately, in my career until now, to be honest, the dynamic that I've always had, you know, both with the national team and in club environments, has always been quite a good relationship, you know, amongst those goalkeepers. You know, there's no doubt that, you know, there's a fire with, you know, inside you that, you know, burns deep and, you know, you want to play, you want to be out there and, you know, you're hoping for your opportunity will come, whether that's through poor form of the other goalkeeper, suspension, injury. I mean, obviously you're not wishing these things upon them, but the reality is that's how opportunities come about. And, you know, there's probably a tiny part of you that is hoping for one of those to eventuate so you do get the opportunity, but, you know, as Schwartzy said, you know, when the moment comes and, you know, you haven't been selected, you know, you're not doing yourself or anyone favours by, you know, trying to detriment, you know, the team or the other goalkeeper or anything by, you know, obviously not carrying out your job professionally. Like Schwartzy touched on as well, you know, during the week, goalkeepers are serving more and more and in warm-ups and all that type of stuff. And, you know, if you're not there and providing that, yeah, that environment and that type of service that's needed, you know, game-related and all that type of stuff to help best prepare the other goalkeeper, you know, you're only, you know, hurting the team and, you know, your objectives for the year and putting yourself above the team. And, you know, that's not going to be, you know, looked upon too greatly, you know, by anyone, by, you know, within the club. And it's not characteristics that I was brought up with as a person to have. And I'm sure it's not characteristics that, you know, a club wants from a player within their team. So, yeah, it's all about, you know, treat people how you want to be treated. If the shoe was on the other foot and you were the goalkeeper that was playing, I mean, how would you like to, you know, be warming up for a game or training during the week? You know, you'd obviously be like, you'd like to get the quality training that you want, you know, the purposeful training, you know, and everything that comes with that, rather than, you know, having someone that you have to sort of put up with and focus on all this other negative aspects that we talked about, where someone, you know, being pissed off that they're not playing and, you know, throwing the toys out the pram, so to speak. So, yeah, I resonate with Schwartzy and his approach there. And I think it's the way to go about it.
Ronnie, you and Jimmy Fraser were big mates. I think you probably both still are. Was there any friendly rivalry between you?
Yes, there was a lot of rivalry between Jimmy and I. We've been mates since, I think, Jimmy was a ball boy behind my goals at Canterbury when we first met. And he's the 8-year difference in us. And later, and I coached him a little bit then. But then he came to play great football with me and play in the Australian team. And he's always complaining that I always got number one and he got number two and he had splinters in his backside and from sitting on there. But as he left, once he left Sydney, Croatia, and then he went to play with St George, he came into his own and he was into the national team. But goalkeepers sort of rare breed. They all stick together for the simple reason that we a lot of times have to train together apart from the team. And basically, you get along pretty well and you try to help each other. And, you know, everyone's always conscious of the fact that, sure, I'd love to play in the first team and I don't want him to have my spot and all this, but you have that camaraderie that keeps you going the whole time. I mean, there's been a lot of goalkeepers. Now, if you take Schwartz's era, there was Bosnic, Kalak and Schwartzer. And those three all played in the same competition in under 13s against each other, because I was coaching at Sydney, Croatia then. And Mark played for Blacktown, Zelko played for us, and Bozza played for Marconi. So you had three goalkeepers of that standard all playing against each other in one competition. When they got to rep teams and to play for Australia and all this, they were always competing with each other. But I'm sure there's probably a bit of animosity in some stages, you know, you think, I should be there instead of him. But basically you stood behind your mates and your goalkeeper that played in front of you. And if you got your chance, you took it. And that was the way it went. I found that when we played for Australia and back in the 70s and 80s era, there were so many good goalkeepers in Australia in the competition. That's before the NSL and during the NSL, that you had to fight to have your spot, because you could pick 10 or 12 goalkeepers who could fill the role for the country. So you had to make sure that you were on all the time, because there were so many people that could do that job. Now it's the ranks are starting to thin a little bit and we're looking a bit short on players for that position.
I just want to finish off our chat by talking about the current World Cup qualifying campaign. Obviously, World Cup qualification is oh so important for football in general in this country. And we've become used to being at World Cups since 2006. We're again sort of on the precipice. We're in the playoffs, as we were in 2018. Matty, how has the journey been so far? Obviously, covering from the outside, it's had lots of ups and downs. Are you still confident that you can make it to the World Cup finals? And how have past experiences perhaps helped on this journey and might help come the playoffs in June?
Yeah, definitely still believing and confident that we can get there. This is my second time going through the qualifying campaign. And I mean, besides, I want to say it's not too different in terms of the ups and downs of the games and the results and those types of things. But then you obviously throw COVID and the impact that that has had on top of it. And it has been quite a different qualifying campaign with all of that. And that's not trying to make excuses, because a lot of teams have been, you know, hit with the similar circumstances, but probably not to the extent as what we've been hit as a national team. As you know, we haven't, there was a time where we went a year and a half, over 2 years without playing a game. And when we came back, we weren't playing on, you know, in Australia and on home soil. You know, I think other nations were back playing a little bit before that, and so to speak. But, you know, like I said, the opportunity is still there. And like I said, my experiences up until now qualifying for a campaign have been exactly what we have been through in terms of results and all that. And yeah, when you don't get the results, it's a results-based business. You know, it feels like the world has been turned upside down, and, you know, you get obviously scrutiny and criticism and all that. But, you know, like, there's no one more disappointed than ourselves as a playing group when we haven't gone out and got the result that we want. So the scrutiny and the criticism, you know, we know ourselves that it hasn't been good enough. And, you know, vice versa, when the shoe's on the other foot, like, when, you know, we get a positive result and, you know, everyone's upbeat and behind us and all that, like, that's just a consequence of us having gone out there and done the work. So, you know, in terms of the public perception, I mean, obviously, you know, it matters to us what they think. And, you know, our objective is to make the public proud and the nation proud of us. And, you know, in a perfect world, we would have done that, you know, having qualified for the World Cup already, but that hasn't been the case until now. And, you know, life and football, whatever it throws your way, you just got to be resilient and you got to keep rolling up the sleeves and getting on with it. And the most important things, you know, are learning the lessons from the moments where things haven't gone our way. What can we do to improve and be better? And yeah, we are where we are right here, right now. And we've got these, you know, this game against UAE coming up, you know, on the 6th of June. And like I said, the challenges that COVID has thrown us. I mean, you know, the previous two camps, Arnie hasn't even been around the playing group the whole time, you know, because he's been isolating for COVID twice. And, you know, that's provided another challenge within itself. So I'm really looking forward to getting together here. I know the boys' seasons are finishing at different times, but, you know, really looking forward to getting some time together. We got a good week together, you know, when we all get into Qatar, and there's going to be some boys that have been doing a week's camp in Dubai as well. And, you know, fingers crossed there's going to be no hiccups with COVID or anything like that. And we can actually get some time together on the pitch, you know, working together as a group for, you know, hopefully 7 to 10 days. And we've got the friendly game against Jordan as well to help prepare. And, you know, common sense tells you that, you know, the more time you can get together and gel and link up and, you know, hit your straps together as a team unit, you know, the better and more quickly you're going to be progressing and all that. And, you know, I'm going to look forward to taking advantage of that time in the lead up to that UAE game and get the result there and have another good week together before taking on Peru to get ourselves to the World Cup.
Schwartzy, you played in many of these qualifiers down the years. The Socceroos have always, it seems to me, had challenges. I've covered many of them as a broadcaster, and you know, quite often most of the squad would fly into Japan with just 48 hours or even sometimes 24 hours notice, very few training sessions. It always seems to be the way that it's problematic, but it's finding a way, I guess, around those issues, because qualification, as I said at the start, just remains so important, doesn't it, for the game in this country. What's your view from an outsider's perspective, I guess, these days, watching on as a fan?
It's like Manny was saying there, the COVID situation has hampered everyone globally, but also I think Manny's right that with the national team, with Australia, it's been a real big problem. Previously, like you mentioned there, Simon, you know, we get in the games 24 hours before and play a game, but that wasn't all the time. You know, that was a couple of times here, there and everywhere, but you always had times in between where you got together. You had moments where you had spent, you know, 4 or 5 days together, a week together, 2 weeks together. Whereas now, because, well, I've certainly over the last 2 years or so, because of the global pandemic, that's been impossible for the Socceroos. Look, we find ourselves in a very unique situation right now where the playoffs are one-offs in on a neutral country, which for me, I think is ridiculous, playing in Qatar in June time. It's absolutely ridiculous. Look, they're not playing a World Cup because it's too hot, but they're happy to play World Cup qualifiers in that region, which is just, it doesn't make any sense to me one bit. I mean, I've been there. Matty's been there. He knows what it's like. People see it on TV and people think, God, the weather looks nice. And that's great. Why are we not beating a team that's ranked 80, 90, 100, whatever it is in the world? And that's part of the issue as well. The perception is it's great weather. It's a beautiful place. Why are they not winning? It's not the reality. The reality is those conditions are some of the hardest conditions, toughest conditions to play in. And that's why, even though it's a one-off, it's an incredibly tough task, because you've got to build in all the factors of COVID, all that lack of time together. Matty was saying that this lead up is so important. The friendly against Jordan, everything about these next week, 2 weeks leading up to that game are crucial. And unfortunately for us, we're in a position where it's come down to this last week. The one time where they get a chance to get together and spend some proper time together, and hopefully, like Matty was saying there, no COVID distractions, because that could also throw a spanner in the works. Mm. So let's hope that week is enough to adapt. It is so hot and it's so draining, but I hope the guys have got it in them to do that. And it's going to be an enormous challenge. But, you know, we've always come up against challenges, probably not as big as this one in terms of the dramatic circumstances and the situation they're in. But we've had big challenges before in trying to qualify against Argentina, Uruguay twice, you know, all that sort of stuff. And we've overcome it. We've had setbacks, but we've also overcome it. So I think the guys know the enormity of the challenge. We all do. They've all been there before. Most of them have been there before. The preparation is key, as we all know. And hopefully, like I said, it goes really smoothly and they give themselves the best opportunity to qualify in an incredibly difficult circumstances.
Last question to both of you before I let you go. I know, Schwarzer, you have to leave. I want to end on a nice positive note. One of the great things about covering the Socceroos, and I've done it for many, many years, is to go to some wonderful cities and different places that you play in right around the globe, from South America to Asia, Oceania. What's the favourite place that you've played in? Maybe not even for a football reason, but for a different story, a place that you've really enjoyed. By the sounds of it, Schwarzy, not Doha in June, but maybe somewhere else. Go on, Schwarzy, and then I'll ask Matty.
Well, you're right on that one, mate. Nowhere in the Middle East in June time. You're not wrong. May, June, July, forget it. Don't even get me anywhere near that place. The conditions are so tough. You know what? It's funny because one of the most hostile environments I've ever been to was obviously Montevideo. I'd love to go back to Montevideo. I'd love to go back to Uruguay. I've read quite a lot about Uruguay economically. You know, the stability of the country and the beauty of it. So I'd love to go back to Uruguay, Montevideo, and spend some time there. And the other place, which really did take my breath away and really excited me and was something of real interest, is the Solomon Islands. It was insane. I mean, as raw and wild as it is, it's tropical and it's amazingly beautiful. And the food was insane.
Brilliant. Matty?
Yeah. I mean, one game that stands out for me was the Brazil World Cup, the first game against Chile. I mean, just... Obviously, it was my first World Cup experience, but just there in Brazil, packed stadium, you know, to finally, to have that experience of a World Cup game and just everything that was, with everything amplified, you know, the passion, you know, that, you know, the Australians and also the Chilean people sung the national anthem in. For me, I think the things that always stand out about a football match is, yeah, the hostility or the atmosphere around the place. And I just remember, going there and that match itself. I guess it doesn't really answer your question as to you know, the country itself and the best place to play. But I don't know.
It's for, a good for enough reason, Matty. Yeah. It's a good enough reason.
I guess, yeah. It's Brazil, the football capital of the world, no? And, yeah, just for that reason, that stands out in my mind.
So, Ron, you were part of the Socceroos team that won the first ever trophy for the national team. That was back in 1967. You won it in Vietnam in the middle of a war. That must have been an incredible, not to say frightening, experience.
Yeah, I think all of us are more excited than frightened because it was the first time we'd been away like that. It was very hard to play in Vietnam because of the conditions and the food, couldn't drink the water. Just to put one thing in there, we were very lucky because a friend of mine had been conscripted into the army. And he was waiting to meet us when we got to Vietnam, when we landed. And so he took us up and got us in with the army, and we had every nights up there we wouldn't eat at the hotel. We'd go to the mess. And so we definitely were lucky in that aspect. We had a good break to get away from where we were. But the hotel we were in, we could sit up on the top of the hotel and you could watch the war from the out and the outs, right, you know, right in the regions away from Saigon. And you could see the flares go up and hear the big guns and then the tracer bullets. And, you know, it's like if you go to the movies, you could sit up there and you were watching something in the movies. Yeah, it was a very difficult time. And it was the weather was so hot. But we had a great bunch of guys who, you know, we went to fight through that. We had a 10-match tour. We won the cup in Vietnam against South Korea in the final. And then we had, I think, another four games. So we had the 10 games. So we had the tour. We went through undefeated, and the basis of that team then went on to the 1969 World Cup qualifiers, where we were just knocked out by one goal to go into, in Mexico, I think. Was it Mexico? And anyway, but Israel, who beat us on the one goal, they did very well at the tournament. So, it would have been very interesting to see how we would have gone if we could have made overseas with that team that started in 67 and went right through. And then a lot of the basis of that was still there in 74.
So there we go. The thoughts of three of the Socceroos greats, Ron Corrie, Mark Schwarzer, and Matty Ryan. Australia's had some wonderful goalkeepers down the years, but they were three and are three of the very, very best. Stay tuned to the Football Australia channels for more celebrations and a look back at 100 years of the Socceroos in the year of their centenary 2022.